Accession number 8941, room number 12.
Major Jefferson, reel 12. I think you were commenting on the strength of the Carda.
Yes, at that time our Carda was still very strong and we could absorb quite a lot of reinforcement. But later on, of course, one gets a bit watered down after years with those. I think we're now talking of Italy more than of North Africa.
So there's no appreciable difference then after the first few days of July?
I don't think so, because we were small. We got our tails up. We were efficient. And I imagine the reinforcements we got were fairly good anyway, because... Or maybe you could perhaps look at it another way and say both the troop commanders have been wounded and the chaps who took over their jobs had lower standards is also a possibility. But I'm certainly have no inhibitions about saying that 11th Field was throughout the war, until the very end of the war, certainly, an extremely efficient, battle-worthy outfit.
You mentioned the mine course at Benghazi.
Yeah.
What did you actually study on that course?
We studied, of course, as I've already said, the crate was certi is dirty. We studied booby traps. We studied... S mines, and those nice little three-pronged German mines that jumped up at you. Well, they were S mines, but and teller mines and shoe mines. And if I can jump forward to Italy, at a later stage in Italy, I actually survived an S mine by breaking all the rules that I'd learned in Benghazi. I plunged forward into the hedge where there ought to have been more of them, and there weren't, thank God. They went off over my head. But that's anticipating a bit.
What were the rules then for dealing with an S mine?
Well, the first rule, if you set it off, the thing to do is not go forward, because and not to go into the hedgerow, because the German manual should have taught them to have put more mine to the hedgerow, but I did that. Unfortunately, I got underneath the bank and can we go forward to Marath, because it's not totally unrelated to this mine course. We got up to Marath, and I remember being detailed to actually go with an Indian or go to meet an Indian force that was due to reinforce 50 Div across the anti-tank ditch at Marath. It must have been 11 Brigade, but I don't know whether the orders actually got them or not. But anyway, I went there and I actually got in my little Tatanaga to a position where I was looking over the anti-tank ditch at the faggots that they were using to build a track with. If I say I was staring at a number of the enemy in the face, don't ask me what their names were, but that was certainly the feeling I got. Unfortunately, I was called back because our attack was called off, because we'd now been diverted to go around Medellin and up into the hills, the Marta Hills, with the left sweep going round wide to Gabies and Marath stagnant, and we were to go through the hills and open up the middle route. And we marched through Medellin that night, I remember, or the next night, and the brigade, and Chalky White and I were the next two to go. We're only one off actually having to put our learning into application, but thank God we weren't required to, because I'm night blind anyway. We went got up into the Martyr Hills, and there we did a couple of the crash actions I was telling you about earlier. Of it, this wasn't down the telegraph poles; it was a map reference so and so fire. That worked pretty well. We spent one day clearing, and then the next day we got up to the top of the Martyr Hills, overlooking a town called Halluf, I think it's called, H-A-L-L-O-U-F. And it was there that this incident with the Bedouin tent took place, and where we took some prisoners and with the 1st 4th Essex. And we cleared them at Martyr Hills. And it was following that that we had to wait 2 days outside Gabies while the highway decorators put on their kilts and marched through. And then from Marath, Wadi Akrit can't have been before Marath, was it? Stop the thing. From Marath we moved to the Wadi Akrit, and there we took up position behind the last range of foothills before the very wide wadi. It's called wadis, the actual wadi was a bit of it, but there was a very wide valley. And then in the night we had to move forward and occupy positions on the forward slope, so that we were actually in view of the entertainment ditch. And indeed, after the battle, General Gertie Tuka came round, and we knew more about what was going on than he did, because we'd been able to watch it. And we watched the action on the left, where the Gurkha, the Lal Bahadur Thapa Wadi's VC, and then in the course of the day, it was while we were occupying that position, one of our battery commanders got killed on a mine. In the course of the day, we went forward, the battery commander and the two troop commanders, and we spent some time sitting on the actual anti-tank ditch at the bottom of the valley. While I was there, I remember it was the most amazing thing, because the Italians must have been firing mortars, but you could look up and see cricket balls coming through the sky, quite large quantities. Fortunately, they were going well over us, because we were actually in their anti-tank ditch. And it was there also that one spent small AP shot actually passed through my leg and smashed the lamp and my armoured AP. But anyway, we eventually got up to the top of the Wadi Akrit, and I remember while we were up there, there was a BBC girl called Marjorie, I forget what her other name was, but her voice made one believe that she had a fairly large, rounded figure. And I remember turning over to her when the battle was over. And we got onto the top there, and we could see down into the valley beyond. And eventually we got down the valley beyond, and eventually we... next battle was Jebel Ghazi, and Jebel Ghazi, what happened? I guess Jebel Ghazi was an enormous jebel on the left with a cleft in between, and here I was in, it must have been a Matilda, it was a nice strong tank, and on the top there was, I could clearly see a German, he was left-handed, a German flinging stick bombs at the Gurkha's position. And we called and fired down on that. I think it was there that I fired the core artillery for the first time. It was there also that I remember a sniper every time I got out of my Matilda, from a fair range, he fired a small thing at me. But he kept on hitting the tank and going ping, which wasn't all that pleasant.
Did you have a lot of experience of snipers?
No. I remember that one, he was... He was the only one that I've known be persistently annoying. Yeah. And he was doing it at a fair range, he must have been. Although I could see his colleague with the stick bomb, and I could, clearly enough to know that he was flinging left-handed, not right-handed. And I remember Dougie, the battery commander, coming alongside in his tank and warning him that the chap was quite a good shot. But no, I... Although I was in the middle of it for 5 years, the number of occasions, touch wood, when I actually sort of no one threatened me with a bed the whole period, or it wasn't that type of war at all.
Did you, as a regiment, lose many men to sniping that you know of?
No. I wouldn't think so, no. No, when we lost men, they were in... we lost several guns with the gun crews, because they were directed to that sort of thing. We lost men to mines. We lost men, I've later found, when we left RB Echelon in Matru, there were probably more killed there than there were in the battery that had the big battle next day. There weren't so many wounded there. We had a lot of wounded in our battle.
You mentioned the mines around Sirte, around the Gulf.
Sirte, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Were they marked minefields or aren't
they? No. I mean, you open that door and it goes bang.
Just
you pick up that mug and it goes bang.
Just booby traps then.
You pick up that pen and it goes bang. And you say, well, that'd be nice to take home to the kids, and it goes bang. Or you go and flush the loo down, and it goes bang. That's the type of...
When you were training at Benghazi for mines, were you trained how to actually clear them?
Well, a week's course, I suppose. It may have been 2 days, you know. But I knew enough to prod the ground with a bayonet. I knew to look for bits of wire on the end of a telemine going off to a nasty little S mine, that sort of thing. But I'm very glad I never had to put it into actual practical application.
You mentioned the highway decorators. Why were they called the highway decorators?
Because the whole of the Alamein men. See, we were 4 months on Rewaita Ridge, yeah? Along comes the 51st Highland Division, months after we fought 3 battles of Alamein. And they stick their little bits of tin with HD, looking like fire hydrant, on as their divisional route, yeah? And everyone knew them as highway decorators because all the highways were decorated with HD signs by these chaps, whose knees weren't brown. Yeah? they had quite a good battle, and we think very highly of them as soldiers, but as a division, they were anathema to us, yeah? Particularly after Gamis, where being Indians, we weren't allowed into the place. They had to wait 48 hours while they came up and polished their kilts.
What you say, being Indians, you weren't allowed in. Why was that?
Because we were Indians. And Montgomery, particularly at that time, didn't like Indians. Later on, when we won a couple of battles for him, he thought a bit more highly of the 4th Indian. But when he came in, he thought the 44th London Division was going to do it for him, but they got beaten up a bit. It was a friendly rivalry. It's a bit like West Ham and Chelsea. I mean, it wasn't.
And it's a friendly rivalry with casualties.
Yes. I've known a few bars where later on in the war, when there were such things, but at the moment we're talking places where there weren't any bars, and they were allowed in anyway. This is good for morale by and large, provided it's
kept
not
in
at the
check.
Right level. Yeah.
When you were going round the end of the Marath line through the hills, what sort of opposition were you encountering there?
There we were against a very good Italian division. In the first instance, the opposition we were encountering was that it was a mountain road, and large lumps were blown away. So there was a great deal of separating and minoring and that sort of work to be done. And when we got through them, there was this Italian division, I think, whether it was the Folgore or not, I don't know, but they're the first name that always comes to my mind when I think of a good one. And they were well supplied with guns, way up at the, just underneath the crest, and they had a dirty great wadi in front of them. I fired smoke shell for a long, long time without even seeing the top puff. I thought I'd go mad. Eventually I managed to get something on the ground I could see, but I think I could have easily have sent 30, 35 smoke cell and not seen one bit of smoke.
It was just too low down.
That wadi, yes.
You mentioned the demolitions. Was this the first time you'd been seriously hindered by extensive demolitions on a line of march?
I think the answer is probably yes. We hadn't... 11th Field, of course, weren't at Hell Fire the first time round. And I've no doubt the 4th Indian had been hindered by demolitions before there and at Kerin. But as far as 11th Field was concerned, we'd fought in the desert and then on the flat. And yes, this was undoubtedly the first time that we'd actually been held up by a broken road. A broken mountain road, anyway.
How long did it take normally to fill in a gap?
Well, we were through those hills in 48 hours, to the best of my memory. Maybe 72, but I think 48. So, obviously, it can't take all that long.
Who were you supporting? Was it, you mentioned
I
Gurkhas.
Supported the 1st, 4th Essex.
Essex.
Personally, I was, yes. And indeed, for that period, they were from Alamein to, I think, the end in our bit of Tunisia, 1st, 4th Essex were my infantry. Later on I became particularly associated with the 3rd, 12th Friendly Force, but that was in Italy.
You mentioned the Italian artillery having their positions just below the crests. Did you have an opportunity to see the Italian positions in general?
This is where I took the prisoners myself. And I had to, when I got them, I had to say, "Don't point that bloody machine gun at me." It was a bit farcical, except that there were a rather lot of them and not very many of us. And they had been defending quite toughly until that moment.
Why did they decide to give up?
One of the reasons they gave us, they were most annoyed at being taken prisoner by a gunner officer, because their gunner officers were always behind the infantry, and I was at least up with the leading infantry and at that particular moment ahead of it.
You were an FOO, were you, at that time?
Yeah. It was going through that gorge where I did a close shoot with clinometer lane, because the little man was 25 yards from me, just behind that thing just over my head. And I remember giving the order, close shoot, clinometer lane. And we're the close bit. So they did lay fairly carefully, I'm glad to say. And their gun positions were good, and they were well laid out and well equipped. I don't think they got much ammunition there. Whether that was a reason, I don't know. But I think lack of leadership, as much as anything, would probably be the answer. And the fact that they probably felt that they were left out on their own, probably communications again. They probably didn't know that what was happening on their left and their right. And
were these chaps gunners or were they infantry, the ones you took?
Oh, they were infantry, the ones I took, but the guns were behind them, and they were, as I say, they were well equipped. And
Sort of infantry positions did they occupy? Did they have trenches or sangers or other field works to protect them?
In this particular place, I think probably other field works would be the best description. They had some trenches that were a little more elaborate than the things you dig overnight. They certainly, it wasn't a concrete defence, but it was a little more elaborate than the position you occupy and move on from. It was people who dug themselves in fairly seriously and perhaps got a bit of wire and stuff, and there certainly was some wire, and there was a minefield. Because some of the, I took my armoured car through the gap in the road, and our sappers had lifted the mines, thank God. And they suddenly found this Tatanaga behind them, the leading infantry.
What sort of uniform were they wearing?
If Italian troops ever wore a purpley Louis purpley sort of uniform, that's what they were wearing. But don't hold me to that. There's probably some khaki about, but I have a feeling of rough purpley type.
What sort of weapons were these Italian infantrymen carrying?
Well, they, all of them, of course, had at least all the, a lot of them had, whether it was the officers only or the officers and sergeants or everybody. Berettas were very common. And then this funny little sort of pop gun rifle with a bayonet that came out on it. And then quite a lot of machine guns, but of various sorts. And of course they're funny little grenades.
Were these sort of red pillar box grenades?
Yeah, red. Which are just dangerous enough to be quite nasty, but not nasty enough to be really dangerous. But I can't remember any details. All I do remember is that they kept on pointing the damn things at me while they were unloading them.
You say they were upset because they'd been taken by an artillery officer, and...
Well, so I say upset. They said, ours are back there, you know.
How did they get this through to you? Did they speak English?
To get that message through wouldn't have required English. Whether they did speak English or not, I can't remember. But, I mean, artillery is a word that's pretty common to any language. An officer or some variation of it. And back there with the fingers.
So it's a mixture of slang and gesticulation.
In those days, one could get by in quite a lot of languages one didn't speak without necessarily having a dictionary around. But the message was very clear.
What did you do with them then?
By now the infantry had come up, and I mean we were now in a proper battle again, and they went back down the line of communication, and I went on, in fact, from there to behind the crossroads. And onto the next ridge, where I was able to, the very last ridge this was of the mountains, where I was able to watch them mining the road a bit further on, and I got onto the very last pimple and was looking over the top when my battery commander came up, and I showed him what was going on. And perhaps the fact he got there, that I got a medal that day and not other days when I perhaps had better days. But he arrived just at the Milmont Critique, and I was able to point out to him where things were, and you could actually see them laying the mines.
These were Italians again, weren't they?
Whether the people laying the mines were Italians or Germans, I don't know, but it was an Italian force.
What did you do about that? Did you call down a
shot?
Well,
I'd been shooting right of that. It was a basin with a fairly steep escarpment, and then a bit of a here were the guns, by now captured, but then there was a final sort of ridge like that, and then the road began to drop away down towards what I presume is Tijan, or the town at the very end anyway. And I had already been calling for fire at fairly maximum range to the right of my position. I mean, we've been doing all our shooting here, and by now I was over there.
So you got beyond?
I was at maximum range and about as far right traverse as I could get from that particular position. But we did some shooting. I don't think I actually was able to get shots onto the people laying mines, but I was able to do some shooting down the valley that they were escaping through. There was the other side of the small ditch that they'd dug. We did a bit of shooting, and then eventually soon peace settled, because that's the end of that film in my mind. Is that view of them actually mining the road to the extreme right of my vision and range.
You said that the Essex came up. Were they motorised, or were they on foot?
They were motorised but on foot. It was Joe Young was the the company commander, and Arthur Noble was the regimental commander, battalion commander, and they were when we went through the Wadi, I went by the road because I'd got my armoured car, but they were actually in the Wadi on foot, but their trucks followed behind my armoured car and behind the sappers, and